Ashley Knapp is the auto advisor. He gets paid to help people pick the car for their needs and also get a good price on it. When he's not doing that, he's a columnist at Pacific Publishing Company and automotive reporter for the American News Radio Network. And he's taking some time out from his busy schedule to be with us today to talk cars. We're at 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. Maybe you've got a specific question about a vehicle you're considering or something more general. And maybe he can help you sort out the complicated task of buying a car today. It's 800-289-5869 or write to us, conversation@KUOW.org. Ashley Knapp, thank you so much for coming back.
Hi, good afternoon, Ross. What a beautiful day we have.
It's fine out there. It's so nice. Nice day for a convertible.
Yes, it is, absolutely.
But not usually here, nice day for a convertible. But I want to ask you about these. You were telling us that you think the cars of the future will be those cars that drive themselves. Google's working on one, and they're not the only car company working on it.
Sure. Every automaker is working on it. What's so interesting, too, is Microsoft's racing to the front of automobile automation. And what they're trying to get to is basically where you call up your car, or your car knows by the alarm that goes off for it to pull up to your front door, because it charged itself automatically overnight, and it pulls up to your front door. You step into it, and you just say, work, and it takes you to work, and you sit and read the paper and do other productive things instead of drive.
That's very Jetsons. And I understand the Google self-driving car is actually on the roads in California. I've been reading about some people getting test rides in it.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And what's so silly is that right now under the law, someone has to sit behind the wheel so that if anything goes wrong, should the car do something wrong, you know, it grabs the wheel. I don't know the accuracy of reports we're getting about it or not. I've been driven in self-driving cars. There were about 15 years ago, there were two concepts of them. One concept was that you put sensors all in the roads themselves, and these were simply magnets in the road. The other concept, which was pushed by Carnegie Mellon University, is that you put cameras outside the car, and the camera learns how to read the road. So it reads striping, it reads the fog line, the solid line on the side of the road, and it sees cars next to you, this sort of thing. Carnegie Mellon University, I think, won out with the concept of automobile vision. So now cars have sonar, which sends out, you know, audible signals or inaudible signals. You've got radar sending out electronic signals from cars with the advanced cruise control. And then you've got vision, like Subaru's using, to see in front of the car.
I just think there might be a big psychological barrier. People like to get in their cars, and they might not always enjoy it. But the idea that you're in control seems to be a pretty important part of the riding in a vehicle, riding in a car experience. You think people will trust it?
You bring on the most and the toughest thing to think about is, I think people will trust it quickly. What I'm scared about is how quickly they will trust it. In that, what we do is we give up to let the machine run us. And the idea is that we should own the machine. We should always control the machine. The fact is that so many crashes a year, 30,000+ people every year, 45,000 was average until recently, dying on highways. For every one person killed, over 60 people are maimed or injured. So automated cars that do not hit other objects would be fantastic. Mm-hmm. Are they really not going to hit other objects? That's what they're testing now.
Well, then there's insurance liability issues. There's a lot of issues to overcome beyond the technology. Ashley Knapp is with me. He's the auto advisor. If you got a question about cars, 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW, toll-free 800-289-5869. Write to us, conversation@KUOW.org. I want to get your take on this new electric car, the Tesla S. It's creating quite a bit of buzz in the auto world. It's been called Car of the Year. It's really expensive. I think it starts at $60,000, but it seems to go beyond electric cars have gone.
Yes, a matter of fact, that's the only electric car I have not driven, but yet I have physically studied it and walked up to them and examined them very carefully by structure and design. And one of the things that that Tesla's doing that I think is so smart is with an automobile that's gasoline driven, you'll pay more to buy more horsepower. With the S model, you can buy more battery to go more range. So this is really terrific. And what also he's doing is every car that is out there is dumbed down to a substantial point. It really is made idiot proof. They try to.
Really? What kind of things do they put in to make it idiot-proof?
A steering wheel. I mean, steering wheel is obsolete. I mean, if you actually talk with the safety engineers, they go, well, we could probably have a car a lot safer if we just got rid of that steering wheel. And if you think about it, and actually there are machines now where you drive a car by a joystick. And the auto engineers and maybe the insurance companies, I don't know quite who, but nobody trusts us to drive with a joystick.
Ashley, are you saying a joystick's safer to drive with than a wheel?
Well, let me put it this way. It's safer to crash with as a joystick. But
Explain that. What do you mean by
well,
that?
Well, on impact, you don't have that big steering wheel, that steering column, and that all that mechanism to deal with. You could have the front of the car way far away from you. That would really look like the Jetsons to do that. And then with a joystick, you could switch it to the left or the right hand, or you could hand it to the person next to you and say, oh, you drive for a while.
Well, we've already started our conversation about electric cars, and Bill has a question about that, too. You can join in 206-543-5869 if you've got a question about cars. That's 206-543-KUOW. Hi, Bill. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, sure. Thank you very much. I was really interested in your thoughts on whether or not you think the electric car is sort of ready for prime time. I'm looking for a new car, and I'm beginning to wonder if the electric car hasn't sort of arrived. It seems like there's something for just about every kind of driving behavior.
Yeah. Do you have two cars in your household or three cars in your household?
Two.
Two cars. Okay. So do you guys have enough or a lack of ego where you could have one car have a purpose so it doesn't have to be your car? Or is there, do you have to have your car and your spouse has to have the other car?
No, not at all.
Oh, dynamite. Then make one a city car and one a highway car, and the electric car is perfected. It was perfected long ago. You know, when I was a little boy, I'd play with little electric cars, and now I can play with big ones. And I really think that the most perfected and yet simple electric car is Nissan's Leaf, which is now made in Smyrna, Tennessee. And you can buy it. The average American is spending about $27,000 for a new car. But a Leaf, you'll see it, they'll say $28,000 on the Nissan website. But with all the incentives in different states, I'm not sure about ours, but in all the incentives, you get it down to about $22,000, a Nissan Leaf. And then you have no gasoline charge.
You'll never pay for gasoline, but are you paying a premium over what a gasoline-powered equivalent to the Leaf would be?
I don't know how to interpret that exactly, because I look at a car goes beyond the hard purchase. There's an emotional issue to a car, and you have to learn the individual emotional issue. If you're really tight on a budget, let's talk used, and maybe we should go to a Corolla or a Civic or something.
Bill, you ready to jump to an electric car?
I sure think so. I mean, I'm wondering if it's just complete plug-in electric only, or if it's something like the Volt. I drive a hybrid right now, but it seems like the Volt is primarily electric with gas backup.
Well, how much do you drive every day?
With electric backup.
How much do you drive every day, Bill? How far?
I drive about, say, 40 miles a day on my commute.
Okay, and you drive one way 40 miles or 40 miles both ways?
Back and forth.
Oh, jeepers. Okay, and you're in one location all day? Yeah, see, you could either plug in, but the fact is a Leaf and any electric car will get you back and forth without plugging in at all, even in terrible weather with the heat on and the wipers going. Yeah, no, you got to go drive a Leaf. Go drive the base model Leaf and see how enjoyable that really can be. Set that as a standard, and then go drive a Volt if you want. But you don't need to carry. You don't need a lot of engine to carry around. You don't need 400 pounds of extra mechanism.
Hey, Bill, thanks a lot for calling. You can, too. 206-543-5869. Ashley Knapp is with us, the auto advisor. We got this from Robin, who writes, wants to know, Ashley, if you would comment on the environmental effects of electric cars, specifically the impact of manufacturing and disposing of the batteries.
The batteries, first off, batteries can be recycled, and so much of the chemicals within them can be recycled, and it's a pioneering science. A kind of a battery that's sort of, if you could say, what would be a battery in motion where the chemicals are changing all the time? That would be a fuel cell. And in a fuel cell, you also can use the chemicals again and again. So the nice thing is that with electric cars, you can recycle. But there's something else. The politics of petroleum are horrible and horrifying. The fact that we move so much petroleum around the planet, to be able to lessen a few truckloads a day from being driven of petroleum, this alone would be fantastic to stop some ships from sailing with petroleum, to stop some oil wells that need to be drilled for the need of petroleum. This is a good thing to do. So the politics of using petroleum is strong. And the head of Nissan, Carlos Ghosn, he said, we're going electric 100%.
What percent of cars sold today are electric? It's pretty small, isn't it? It's
maybe like 1%.
It's pretty small. Maybe,
yeah, really tiny. I mean, it really is. But it's going to be – it'll be in the 19-teens, the New York Automobile Show was one-third petroleum, one-third electric, one-third steam. So, you know, steam lost steam, but electric is now coming back, and we can have high-speed electric. Electric is very fulfilling. Most people have not had a chance to enjoy the simple lifestyle electric gives you. No oil changes, no tune-ups. Mm-hmm. You're usually not going to break down at all. There's, like, almost no moving parts.
We've got Matthew on the line from Ballard. Matthew, what's your question for Ashley Knapp, the auto advisor?
Yeah, so my question is, I'm looking for a used car. And I'm looking for something that will be good for kind of enjoying the Northwest lifestyle, getting out to the mountains, you know, being able to throw gear in the back. And so I've been looking at something along the lines of a Toyota 4Runner, just because it's four-wheel drive and it's lifted up a bit so you can get onto certain trails to get out and do some hiking, and it has room to kind of throw gear in the back. But I really don't know kind of, you know, what other options there are besides that, and wanted to see if there's some advice on that.
What do you do with the other 95% of your time besides go off-road? When you drive to work, how far do you drive?
Drive to work probably only 5-10 miles. I mean, really short.
Okay. And so fuel economy doesn't mean that much to you?
No, I mean, it does in the respect of, you know, be able to take it and do some trips. You know, like, I like to get out to the coast. And so with the weekends, you know, I drive a lot more on the weekends.
Are you the only driver?
Out and doing things.
You're the only driver?
I would be the primary driver. So.
Okay. So. But there'd be another person. And how tall are you?
I'm 6'2".
And the other one? Other driver?
5'10".
Okay, very good. So you'll both fit fine. I think that's a fine vehicle to go to. I'll tell you what I don't like about it is that it's got a ladder frame, metal frame underneath that vehicle, and it will be a bit of a rougher ride than a unit body vehicle. It is extremely reliable, easier to repair. Everybody makes options for it. My goodness, you can doctor it, and I'll bet you can find one driven by a very gentle driver. And that's the trick. You know, don't get yourself something rough and ready that someone else beat the Dickens out of, okay? Get yourself something that, you know, is a sweetheart car and maybe driven by a lady, a little less testosterone behind the wheel, and you get yourself a gently driven one of those. I think that's fine. And be aware, they're prone to roll over. So you practice on a empty parking lot sometime in Skidsville so you understand the limits of adhesion. It may be better for you to hit the object you want to avoid than for you to risk a rollover trying to do an accident avoidance maneuver. This is a decision you have to make driving an SUV, particularly that type.
Matthew, I hope that helps.
All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks for calling.
Have fun.
Let's go to Lamont. He's listening to us this afternoon, listening to Ashley Knapp, the auto advisor, giving us some advice on what cars to look for, what cars to look away from. Lamont, thanks for calling.
Thank you for having me. I have a very long daily commute. I retired from the Navy, but I got a job up on the Army base. So I drive from Bremerton to Fort Lewis every day. And I own a minivan that's very comfortable, and I use it because my kids have practice and stuff. So I'm looking to say, what should I have as a regular daily commute vehicle?
How many people?
That long.
How many cars in your household?
I own two of them.
Okay, so
2002 minivan. And a little Ford pickup truck.
Oh, okay. But and how many in your household?
Me and two kids.
Okay.
So I could keep the minivan for when I'm with them. But what do I do when I'm driving back and forth every day, Monday through Friday?
You know, I'd lean toward. Do you really use a pickup truck? I mean, do you need a pickup truck?
Not necessarily. I do use it, but it does stay parked a lot.
Yeah, there you go. Right, and you could use the minivan for a lot of the pickup truck, probably. So you know what you might want to do is keep the minivan and head for replacing the pickup truck and replace the pickup truck with some kind of station wagon or meaning a small SUV or a four-door sedan, and you could go to a higher mileage vehicle. Do you have a price ceiling you've decided for yourself?
No, and that was my thought, possibly keeping the van for the comfort and size and saying get rid of the truck and say what should I have that I'm driving every day.
Yeah, I'll tell you something. I would aim for a car about the size of a Honda Civic, about 170-something inches long. And how cheap do you want to be? I mean, let me put it this way. You can buy some fantastic V6-powered gasoline cars that are like, let's say, a decade old but in cream puff shape if you hunt for like $2,000. If you want to spend $10,000. You can go to newer four-cylinder and look at a Honda or a Mazda 6 is a wonderful buy, or a Mazda 3. Both are wonderful buys in the used car marketplace. And then Hyundai Sonata, matter of fact, has come to mind. I just did some research. The Hyundai Sonata was showing up, I think, uniquely good for reliability used, and that would be from a price range probably from $5,000 up to $15,000.
Okay, I hope that helps out, Lamont. We got this email from Rebecca who asks, I just moved from rural Vashon Island to Capitol Hill in Seattle. I want to downsize my car, a manual transmission Mazda 5, so that it will be easier to drive, parallel park, etc. in the city. What car do you recommend, Ashley?
Well, I think I want her Mazda 5. That is such a terrific
car. What will you trade it for?
I will gladly trade you Tuesday for a hamburger today. I think that what she'd probably want is an automatic transmission, so she's not, you know, doing the Fred Astaire Ginger Rogers while sitting in her car all the time. So I'd be heading for an automatic transmission. And automatics now tend to get better mileage than the manuals because they go to the highest gear the quickest. Next, if she could go to 100% electric, and I hate to say electric Leaf, but in another year, there'll be all these other choices. You know what she might want to do? Let me make this is an interesting suggestion. Rebecca might want to try this. Do what I did. Get rid of the car completely right now. You're in the city. Let's see if you can live on public transportation and the car to go or the zip car or the occasional use and see what that does to your budget. You don't have to pay for parking. You don't have to pay for the headache of taking care of a car. So public transportation, the taxis and the zip cars and the cars to go, these are things that maybe Rebecca would find support. Then I'd be driving everything electric. And I try to avoid a hybrid in the meantime. This is a landmark year. Diesel fuel will outsell gasoline in the United States for the first time ever.
Really?
Yes, yes. And so many cars are coming in as diesel. I don't recommend that Rebecca look for a diesel for an in-city car. I recommend a 100% electric, a hybrid, or very small gasoline.
Few people must buy a car right now. There's always a choice to wait
yes.
for a while. Is there anything technologically on the horizon that you think's worth waiting a few years for?
Oh, you know, that's so good. While it's always good to plan ahead, one of the troubles we have is we're sort of attached to this word new. You know that every, you know, I want the latest, I want the newest. Whatever's coming out right now, you're not going to buy it for a year if you've got, you know, the people who buy everything first, I love these early intenders. I want to buy everything new. I want to get out of the box. I want to play with it myself. I do. But I just let my friend do it, and I look over his or her shoulder and enjoy myself.
You're saying don't be on the bleeding edge, hold back.
Let me tell you the car that I think is going to really capture the market by intellectual heart, and the car starts in Washington State in Moses Lake. It's BMW's coming out with the i3 in Germany before the end of the year. This is a car that is substantially carbon fiber and 100% electric, and it'll be in the United States within 2 years, but let them enjoy it and perfect it over there.
And I understand, are they making these carbon fiber bodies here in Washington State?
This is what amazes me. They're only making the carbon strands in Washington State. Now, they tell me directly, I just spoke with BMW this morning, and they tell me they put it here because of our hydroelectric power and because carbon fiber, to make it so purely, is very energy intensive, so they want our cheap hydroelectric power. But Moses Lake is uniquely close to where they build the world's largest fabricated carbon fiber craft, the Boeing, new Boeing jet, 787. And so I wonder whether, you know, Google puts their offices in the backyard of Microsoft, you know, so I wonder what's going on there. But I'm excited. They take the carbon fiber from here in Washington State and they ship it to Germany, where they then make the fiber mats. And they claim they have the finest fiber in the world for exactly their purpose. Michelin makes their own steel for their tires. So they have a blending issue that no one else has. They can do it better than anybody, Michelin can, with tires. Does BMW have that with their carbon fiber? Maybe so, because they'll be one of the only ones making it for pure purpose.
Ashley Knapp, the Auto Advisor, is with us. We've got Tom on the line calling from the U District today. Tom, what's your question?
I'm looking for a reliable all-wheel drive sedan, something nicer than the Subaru Legacy. And also, I'm wondering if there are any hybrid AWD cars out there. Thank you.
Well, you know, that's a good question. It brings to mind, you know, well, maybe you don't know, but the hybrid car, the way it is now, is so temporary. We are going to be seeing diesel hybrids and natural gas hybrids. And as soon as you put the diesel engine to the hybrid, everybody will be screaming for that. And then it's only a matter of time before the ultimate hybrid is really a fuel cell with a battery, no engine at all. So the problem with buying a hybrid is that you're buying a very limited technology. Even if you bought a gasoline engine, there'll probably be parts well into the decades after, whereas a hybrid, all you have to do is leave out one essential valve or something and the car can't be fixed again. I've got to say, a four-wheel drive hybrid, the or fuel economy, the best thing coming out is going to be for Mitsubishi. You were talking about what is in the edge, Ross. Mm-hmm. What is on the leading edge is Mitsubishi will come out with a first gasoline electric hybrid, and they'll actually use gasoline to drive two of the wheels, electric motors to drive two of the other wheels. You'll be able to go 100% electric when you want and control it. You'll be able to go four-wheel drive in synchronous movement as you like it.
One final question. Elizabeth writes to say, our venerable 1995 Camry will give up the ghost one of these days. What is the overall cheapest car we can buy? Gas, repairs, purchase cost, everything. And Elizabeth adds these details to her personal use. It's our only car. My husband commutes by mass transit. I commute by car 100 miles once a week and another 35 miles once a week. Once in a while, we'd like to take a driving vacation. So what, for Elizabeth, is the cheapest car she can get overall, gas, repairs, purchasing cost to meet those needs?
Boy, that's a tough question. The range issue means that she's realistically out of an electric car to have that small percentage, like the 100 miles a week, and if she has to move around, and if it's her only car. Remember that most households we hear have two or three cars attached to them, so they have one car, which is, you know, giving up a lot. I'd have to say it could be the Chevy Cruze with a 1.4-liter engine, little turbo engine. I believe it's getting 42 miles a gallon.
Is that Cruze highway with a Z?
Yes, the Chevrolet Cruze. Then Mitsubishi this year. Mitsubishi's going to come out punching in the next couple of years. They have a car that will get, I think, 45 miles per gallon gasoline. It may be a little smaller than you're comfortable with to drive the distance. I have to say you have to make the Chevrolet Cruze with an automatic transmission, 1.4-liter engine, your standard to compare other cars against.
Great. Hey, Ashley, thank you so much for coming by again. It's always a pleasure to have you with us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Ross.
Ashley Knapp is the Auto Advisor. David Hyde produces our show with Arwin Nix. We got production help from Hannah Byrne, Cameron Drews, Andy Hurst, and Amber Cortez. Bernard Ouellette is our engineer. So it's 79 degrees right now in the University District. We could be headed for a high temperature today of 79 degrees at SeaTac.
I'm sitting by the side of a river, underneath a pale blue sky. I've got no need to worry, I'm in no hurry. I'm looking at the world go by. Just sitting in the midday sun, just soaking up that current fun, with no particular purpose or reason. I'm sitting in the midday sun.
That's the Kinks, Sitting in the Midday Sun on KUOW FM Seattle.